Emanating from the dark recess that is the basement studio, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. This is the best of the Atlantic Voice Podcast, and I'm Zeph. Alone in the basement studio. Now, this isn't the first time. If you listen to our DC Auto Show bonus episode, you'll know how this sounds when it's just me and not my partner. But never fear, fans and friends of Eric. While he's too lazy to get involved in this highlight special, he will be joining us over the next 60 minutes or so through the magic of computer editing. In broadcasting, you know you've arrived when you're putting out a best-of episode. Of course, if we're honest, we'd have to question if A, we're even in broadcasting, and B, that we've actually arrived. Isn't it just a tad hubristic to be publishing a best-of episode? Well, if the answer to the first two questions is no, then the answer to the last has to be yes. And if the answer to those first two questions is yes, then by extension, the answer to the last has to be no. Still following? No? Then for those of you for whom this is your first Atlantic Voice podcast, well, you are now experiencing what our regular listeners endure on an episodic basis. So, let's get on with some, how should we put it, extracts? I think highlights might be a little presumptive. Now, there's a yin and yang between my partner and I. I tend not to know the facts, and even when my partner does, it's best for both of us if those facts don't get in the way. A lack of knowledge coupled with supreme self-confidence is a dangerous cocktail that both of us are more than happy to imbibe in. To give you a sense, we open with yours truly equating the Atlantic Voice podcast to the achievements of Sir Isaac Newton. We then merge into Eric seeking the answers to the Big Bang.
Honest. Can I say something?
Yeah.
You've just said that you didn't do any research. Now, you sent me an email this week saying, you know, I want to talk about driverless cars. I've spoiled the topic.
Yeah.
Yet you've already, without doing any research, you've rattled off the reason that we're doing this topic. I'm very impressed by that.
Well,
please explain to our listeners what the Senate Committee on Hujimawap and Technology.
It's the Commerce, Science, and Transportation.
Yeah,
but for the commerce in there, by the way, that sounds like it'd be a nice committee to be on. You know, like you get to see sort of interesting things and stuff like that. But
name
it's not
the
really
committee again.
Commerce, Science, and Transportation.
Those things, it feels like kind of a throwaway committee.
Yeah.
Like all science and then the transport guys. And then commerce, when you say commerce to me, for some reason I have visions of like ships carrying grain.
We could include that. I don't know.
But that doesn't seem very technological.
I suspect it's interstate commerce.
Okay.
Among the states. So, but they had a hearing. And by the way, you were asking me about the research. So my no research is some research.
Okay.
As opposed to your research, which is...
Going to Wikipedia.
There you go. Well, though, I mean, that's what I rely on as well.
I don't know why that's such a...
Actually, almost all the topics we have, you see...
Again, let me say this about the lack of research. After Earth came out last week, it's had bad reviews and it's bombed. That's all. That's accuracy.
So the Senate Commerce...
It's like Isaac Newton. He actually didn't do anything else, but anytime someone hassled him for sitting around, he just said, remember that thing with the apple? Now go away. Yeah. When someone says,
that's called resting on your laurels.
Isaac Newton, what else did you do? He's like, I did that one.
I don't know if we have any laurels to rest on.
Well, we do. Our prediction on After Earth.
Well, that, okay. It's not a very
big laurel.
I didn't
even use Wikipedia to come to that.
Yeah, well... The other space news that was out there, we're not doing an all-space podcast, but the other space news was out is we have basically baby pictures of the universe. That they...
Yes.
These telescopes that are out there, I think what they don't... I think they're actually...
like the Hubble.
They're measuring, radio waves more than light, but what they're able to do is turn that into pictures and things like that. And I will explain, supposedly, what this does, and then I will... ask you how this could possibly work. But in event, the way they
describe this... I understand. I know that you're confused by this, but I'm going to be able to explain
it. The way they describe this is, you know, light takes obviously a very long time to get over big enough distances. Light's fast, but it takes a while to get here over the kind of distances we're talking about. And so if they can reach further away, what they really is almost basically seeing back in time, because the light was this far away. So,
yes.
For example, the images captured by this telescope show the universe is 13.8 billion years old.
Yeah.
Which, number one, is somewhat older than they earlier thought. But only the pictures are supposedly of 370,000 years after the Big Bang. So you're talking about,
It's right
that's a small amount of time. Like, so the baby pictures, mind you, baby pictures 370,000 years old. We don't think about it, about baby pictures. But in any event, so it's basically like a big cloud. It's supposed to be shortly after the Big Bang.
Okay.
And I get the idea that if the light takes a long distance to go here, but the Big Bang, the idea was we were all the matter was in one place and then explodes out.
I get that.
But if we all exploded out, how are we taking the pictures back from behind us? I mean, like, I don't get this whole system. Okay. Like, we're looking back in his, and which way would we even know to point? I mean, are we off on the edge of the Big Bang, and so we're taking back a picture towards the center? I don't understand how this works. Please explain.
This is to do with Albert Einstein's theory of relativity. If you're sitting on a train in a station next to another train, and the other train starts to move, you think that you're moving. That's Albert Einstein's theory of relativity. That's the Cliff Notes version. That's how it's always been explained to me. So I want you at home to apply what I've just told you.
The theory of relativity is when you went around the Earth and then you came back and you'd be younger than your brother or something like that.
But what I'm saying is he invented it when he was sitting on a train in the station.
Okay, how does that explain the picture thing?
Because we're not moving, but it is.
What's moving?
The universe. Look,
I don't feel this is explaining me adequately.
Because it's to do with how if you go faster than light, you're also going faster than time, right? So what I'm saying is this. Look, I'm going to do it on a... They say that a light ray from the sun takes 8 minutes to get here. So what I'm saying is, if you had a telescopic camera powerful enough, you could see it leaving 8 minutes before it arrived. Because it takes 8 minutes to get here. Think of that light ray.
No, that's not the
way. Think of that light ray.
You can only see it because the light got to you.
All right. But
you can't, like, reach out and bring it closer.
Don't think of it like light. Think of it like, imagine that ray of light is a washing machine.
Yeah.
It takes 8 minutes for the washing machine to get from the sun to Earth. You take a picture of it because it's going faster than light. You take a picture of it when it's leaving, even though it's already here, because it's traveled faster than light.
You can only take a picture of something by the light reaching you.
No, no, but remember, the telescope is already out there.
No, no, the telescope's not at the sun. But if it's halfway there, it doesn't work that way.
Again, imagine that you're on a train in a station next to another train, and the other train moves. You think you're moving.
This is like the worst science explanation I've ever experienced.
That's how Einstein.
You had told me before we went into this podcast that you were going to able to explain it to me, and I don't feel this is explaining it to me.
I've explained it to you. We're able to know this because of Einstein's theory of relativity.
Well, I get that.
And I've just explained to you Einstein's theory of relativity. Everything is relative to something else. Boom, there you go, done. Okay. Next topic.
Now, the one thing they did say about
the picture... If you're confused at home, please feel free to email us. Yeah. I'm not confused at all.
The only thing I can think of is that the Big Bang, when all the matter went apart...
I'm going to explain it to you right now.
It literally went faster than the light. Like, so we got out a head start, and then the light's catching up.
You're getting there
still.
Okay, I'm going to give you a simpler version, because clearly the simple version of Einstein's theory of relativity didn't work for you. Do you remember in Superman the movie... Not the new one that sucked with the guy who we don't know, Superman.
You're not
going
to be talking about making the Earth go backwards.
It's the same thing because Superman flew around the Earth so quickly, like faster than the speed of light, that he made everything go backwards, and then he brought everyone back alive because he made time go backwards.
Yeah, it's amazing.
This is kind of the same as that.
Face.
I don't question these things. When it comes to this sort of science, I don't question it. I just go, that's the physics of it.
All right.
Because I believe in science, so I trust it.
I thought you didn't even believe we landed on the moon.
Well, yeah, because I don't think we had the science to do that.
But one of the other interesting things about the picture is that it's like the cloud of stuff is not what they expected. It's got like cool spots. I think it had like some drafty areas.
Oh, you'd be cool. I thought you meant it's cool looking stuff.
No,
the pictures on it.
Yeah, the picture, but it's like, you
like
know,
it's really pretty.
All their prior science.
I can't believe I've just said that as a grown man. It's really pretty. Like, it's pretty, the colors and everything.
You know, the thing is, that's a whole big cheat, though, right? Because...
Okay.
They're not taking pictures of light. They're taking pictures of radio waves, and then they use processing.
I thought it was gas and dust and stuff.
Well, that's what the picture is of.
All these bits that are attacking us, isn't that where they all came from?
But it's like the picture is a set of data. Like, it's like black and white, and they colorized it. Like when they say it's all pretty, that's because they put a bunch of stuff on so we could perceive it, because we can't perceive radio waves, right?
So what does it look like then?
It don't look like anything. I don't know what the heck it looks like.
Well, it looks like a train leaving a station. Yeah. That's how it works. That's the theory of relativity.
But they said it's like it was expected to be, based on the science they had done so far, a regular, smooth pattern, because it's so long ago that it was so close to the Big Bang that everything should have sort of been evenly distributing. It hadn't reclustered, but it's a very irregular pattern. And so they're a little bit surprised by this, which tells me, right, we just talked about all the science things.
Hence the phrase cluster.
Yeah.
It was all a bit of a cluster.
The scientists
don't used to stay when his plans got messed up.
All these people are talking about this stuff, and we had a good joke about Einstein's theory of relativity and all this sort of
stuff.
Which
does apply in this instance, people.
And admittedly, I think it's pretty clear that neither of us really understands how this stuff works. But
I don't understand how it works, but I know why it works.
But I'm not sure they say these things so confidently. I'm pretty sure that in 50 or 100 years, it'll be a whole different theory. Like, the whole fact that they're getting surprised by stuff. Oh, look, it turns out the galaxy is this much, the universe is this much older than we expected. I don't think they know what they're talking about. So.
And I'm going to agree with you. I want to make a brief comment on science. And I'm very respectful of science. But on something like this, where you can't prove anything, you can just say whatever you like and go, yeah, that's what it is. And I agree with you. In 50 years, someone will come up with a different reason, and you'll go, oh, yeah, that's what it was.
You end up with people having a podcast talking about this stuff and trying to sort out things about trains leaving stations.
But that's why Albert Einstein's theory of relativity, that has survived the test of time.
Actually, I think there's...
And I don't mean that as a pun on time, because it does explain time travel.
If somebody knows more science, I think actually a bunch of those theories have been refuted over the years, and it's all, like, modified stuff.
Yeah, but
there was something recently came out that somebody
I've sat on a train and seen another train leaving, and for a brief second I've thought, ooh, we're moving. And it's only then when I realized that we haven't. And that's the whole point, because everything is relative to everything
else. That's true. It is relative.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers any
questions. Are we done with space?
I think we are done with space.
Okay, so I'd like
to... We've sorted it out.
So, okay, I have a segue to get to our next topic of yard work, but I was wondering if you had a segue.
Between space and yard work?
Yes.
No, let's use yours.
Okay. We've just talked about the Big Bang being a load of dust and stuff being thrown out there. Apparently you wanted to talk about yard work because it would appear that your yard is a bit of a mess because you still haven't tidied up your leaves from October.
Now I have. So
that was a pretty good segue.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of crap out in your yard, and it looks like the Big Bang out there.
There was definitely a lot of dust. I was using a leaf blower.
Okay.
And I was also
you see, and that's what the Big Bang...
The
if you're an ant in your garden and you're out there with a leaf blower and you're an ant, you're looking up. And to your ant buddies, you think you are seeing creation.
That could be.
There you go.
They're probably having a podcast about it now.
And one ant is going to another. You know something? It was kind of pretty.
That's right. I didn't understand it, but it was very pretty.
Exactly how Einstein's theory of relativity ended up in our meteors and yard work episode has slipped my memory. Superman, like Eric's beloved Star Wars, has appeared in a couple of episodes. Now, neither my partner nor I would say we're big Superman fans, and in this upcoming segment from part one of our summer movie preview, I make very clear why I'm not, and in the process, actually spark Eric's interest in the character. I'm over Superman. Let me tell you why. He's Superman. Now, Superman can do everything. He can fly, X-ray vision, he can throw steam locomotives everywhere. He's Superman. All these modern superhero movies, now I'm not talking about the new Batman and the new Spider-Man, these movies are all predicated on our superhero being at some level human.
Right.
Superman is a character, he's Superman.
Well,
there's absolutely no drama in Superman.
But you can tell
right... You have a movie, Superman shows up and dominates.
I think...
No, I'm not finished. In the old Superman movies... He flies backwards around the world and he changes time.
And we're not going to go
in
that.
In the comic book Superman, the only thing that can beat him is Krypton, which isn't even real. You have to make up something in order to make the hero, to inject any sense of drama. So I'm watching these trailers for Superman, and it's all about this guy, and he doesn't know what he's supposed to be, and he's saving the school bus, and Kevin Costner is telling him to be a regular dude, and Russell Crowe is telling him he can be like a god to all these people. I'm like, whatever. He's Superman. There's no drama in Superman. Let me tell you the only weakness Superman has. He doesn't have any pockets in his costume. That's the only drawback to being Superman. So if he goes out, he has nowhere to put his keys or his credit card. That's it for Superman. He can do everything. Where's the drama in that?
Well, actually, I think you're starting to convince me to go see the movie because I think...
Where's the drama in that?
The drama is going to be... It's hard being
to
Superman,
be everybody's savior.
Yeah, it's got to be a nightmare being Superman. It's a nightmare. It's too so difficult to be able to fly.
Well, think about it.
Vision.
Think about it. If you were expected every time, like if you have to save everybody, that's your, because people know you are so great, you're so powerful. Why don't you save everybody? Why aren't you out there saving everybody 24 hours a day? It doesn't matter. You that's your job. You have to save everybody all the time. Don't you think that would become somewhat psychologically difficult?
Okay, this ground has been covered in the Superman movies themselves. In Superman 2, he decides he wants to be human. And he finds out that this kind of sucks and he wants to go back to being super. And at the end of the movie, he goes back to being Superman.
Yeah, but that was all because he wanted to be with Margot Kidder.
It doesn't. And she went crazy in real life. My point here with Superman, all I'm saying is, as a character, I think he is, ironically enough, the weakest of the superheroes. Look at just the superhero movies out this summer. Iron Man, he has that thing next to his heart that keeps him alive. There is
a plot device.
Yeah, but it's a plot device that makes him more real as a character. But Superman, I don't want to hear that you've got problems. I don't want to hear it. Well, you're Superman.
You know what? See, that's a perfect example. You would be the problem, right? So, like, I'm willing to sympathize with his issues, but you are the mass of people that says, hey, you're Superman. Why? You should not be complaining. You're Superman. You should not be complaining. Well, it's just that kind of perspective that would lead people to make his life difficult.
Is Lex Luthor in this Superman movie? No. Is anyone playing Lex Luthor?
I don't think so. No, particularly because of General Zod being Michael Shannon.
He's going to be the villain.
He's probably going to be the villain.
But General Zod was in Superman 2. And Lex Luthor was in Superman 2, because that was Gene Hackman. Traditionally, Lex Luthor is a more interesting character.
Those Superman movies, other than maybe the first one, were horrible. But we've gotten in this
Superman 2 is a classic. Superman 3 has Richard Pryor in it.
That's horrible.
That's a great movie.
Oh.
when he's ripping everyone off by just adjusting their accounts by 1 cent, and then he's keeping all the money.
Wasn't that the plot of Office Space?
Yeah, they're all like that.
Yeah. So anyway, so we've got, in addition to Russell Crowe, Kevin Costner, we have Diane Lane, Amy Adams, I mean, who's, you know, pretty freaking high power right now, right?
No, that is
Lawrence Fishburne.
That is a kick-ass cast.
That's right.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, you know, this is big, big power here. It's interesting, actually, when I was thinking about it, right? The main star, Henry Cavill, I don't know how you pronounce his name. He's way below all those people. He's really being thrown into the middle of something with some serious power.
I think it's Henry Cavill. I think he's a British actor. And his claim to fame so far...
British actors all over the place.
His claim to fame... So, I think it's cheaper. His claim to fame so far was that he was the number two behind Daniel Craig in the Casino Royale screen tests. And he was the one that the director wanted. Martin Campbell, the director of Casino Royale, wanted to cast Henry Cavill because he was like 23, 24.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt that a young, unknown guy would fit this notion of James Bond at the start of his career.
Mm-hmm. He probably Cavill, would be doing Man of Steel.
Cavill apparently tested great. And he blew everyone's doors off. But they'd already decided they were going to go with Daniel Craig.
By the way, in case Penny didn't know, but Zeph is a bit of a Bond geek.
I admitted that earlier in the show. But apparently, though, that was... And I'd never heard of him until his name was circulating on the Bond thing. And then he's kind of had a career. I don't know what else he's been in. But then he landed the Superman role. I mean, he looks the part. I've seen photos of him.
Yeah, he definitely looks like a Superman.
All this kind of thing. Again, I actually think it's probably going to be a very good movie. It's got a great cast. It's got some good people involved. But at the end of the day, I'm already suffering from Superman ennui.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I was pretty pessimistic about it.
I've seen the trailers, I'm like, oh, this actually could be pretty good.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It definitely looks cool, that's for sure. I mean, compared to the other movies. And one of the biggest things about Superman, I think one of the biggest problems they have for a number of these comic book things, I think it's the same problem they have for Avengers, is they... It was drawn for a comic book. Like, so you did it simple. Red cape, blue outfit, you know,
nice
and simple. And now when you try to bring that into a movie where it's contemporary and not have it look like he's wearing his pajamas, I think as you've said in other podcasts, it is kind of weird. And so you can see they've given it some texture and sort of like everything's a shade darker than it was before and things like that. So it's...
This is the interesting thing, though, about Superman. In terms of his place as a character, because he is the oldest of the superheroes. He was DC's first character back in like 1925 or something.
Mm-hmm.
He's like basically, he's the granddaddy of them all.
Yeah.
And yet now in the films, even though he's been done before a couple of times, in this current run, Batman, Iron Man, Spider-Man, the Avengers, X-Men, he's the last one to the table. And in a weird way...
Because I think it was a hard project. Well, I mean, people wouldn't be able to figure out how to tackle it without bringing in the dark themes.
That's the thing. He's the last one to the table. So apart from having to stand on its own, apart from having to stand with its comparison with how people feel about the Superman movies from when I was a kid, and as much as when you watch those, the special effects are ropey, they are still quite definitive.
I like that word, ropey.
They're still definitive in the way that Star Wars appeals to people. Like, we have fond youthful memories about those Superman movies. This one, the bar is so high because it's not just competing against previous incarnations of itself. It's competing against, like, again, I don't think anything could be done better than what Christopher Nolan did with Batman. That, to me, that's as great as all these other ones are, and I enjoyed the original Iron Man. I enjoyed one of the Spider-Mans. I still think Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, and even Dark Knight Rises. The Dark Knight is ultimately the definitive superhero movie, all the way around. In a weird way, how can any film compete with those? Especially if you're going to go that route with some angst and some darkness.
Right. Listen, if he pulls it off, they pull it off, I guess, because he's the producer, but they pull that off, that's pretty amazing, because that's the thing, is that Batman was perfect for that. I mean, it was a perfect meeting of story to,
again,
what we want in a modern movie.
And that's the thing, the decision to fill Superman with angst, it's just not very believable. I don't understand what your problem is. You're a dominant force. Other than having nowhere to put your keys, you're a dominant force. I don't want to hear it.
All right. Well,
Superman's got problems. Seriously? Come on now. Our summer movie preview wasn't our only multi-part special from the last year. Trawl our back catalogue, available on iTunes for free, and you'll find our James Bond special, our Christmas special, and our National Recording Registry opus. In this upcoming extract from part 3, we discuss punk, grunge, and why it's important for rock stars to consider dying young as a career move.
Well, actually, we should start with punk. You know, there's definitely some punk there. They recently, we mentioned, put in the Ramones, their album, The Ramones. This being Blitzkrieg Bop off of there. Which... You know, so when it comes to punk, it's sort of going to be an interesting one because...
Yeah, I've got a problem with this.
Well, you can see...
So I've got a problem on a couple of different levels with the Ramones being the only punk representative thus far. Now, I understand that this is the National Recording Registry is funded by the U.S. government, and as we've said here, it is aesthetically important and it reflects life in the United States. The Ramones, very good that they are, very talented. What's his name? Is it Johnny Ramone, Benny Ramone? What's his name? The main Ramone guy.
They're all named Ramone, yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Ramone.
If you want to represent punk, there's only one band that should go in. Again, one seat in the lifeboat.
No, this one seat theory doesn't fly, because otherwise we'd be done the first year. So sure. The one seat, then the other fly. But we'd say, talk about some people are better than others at this.
You just can't have punk without the Sex Pistols.
In America, you can.
But then the Ramones, I've just listened to that song. It's not even punk.
It's American punk.
Yeah, that's not very good, is it?
Well, that's not...
Let me ask you, who do Green Day sound like? Who do they sound more like? The Clash and the Pistols or the Ramones? Boom. Clash and the Pistols.
Take the Clash out. Between the Pistols and the Ramones, I'm going to say they sound more like the Ramones.
I have to disagree with that. The thing with the Ramones is, and I guess now, as someone, and I'm going to speak now from the heart because this is my generation. I was, you know, getting acne and all that type of thing.
I thought you were a mod.
I was a mod, but it's still like sounds of my generation. The Ramones sounds too nice. It sounds too musical. Proper punk, to a certain extent, is noise. I mean, the Pistols, frankly... I mean, there are some great songs in there, and then there's a lot of times of people screaming and instruments being thrown around. Yeah. That's punk. Yeah. The Ramones is music.
Maybe that's what makes it better.
No, it makes it better music. It doesn't make it better punk. Because punk isn't about the song. It's about everything that goes with it.
It's fair enough. I mean, like, so I'm jumping ahead a little here because we're going to talk about some things that maybe ought to be in there.
See, look, here we go. The Sex Pistols album, Never Mind the Bollocks. That's in your face right there.
Yeah, but see, it's a very British
thing.
What's
the Ramones album called? The Ramones. Best of the Ramones.
No, not the best of the Ramones. It's the Ramones. It's a very American album way to do it.
No quality punk band is going to self-title their album.
Why not? Maybe it's just that simple. We're the Ramones.
Because they don't do that. No quality rock band self-titles their album.
Really?
Nirvana.
Led Zeppelin?
Well, no, I'm talking about more modern, like, you know, like my generation.
Yeah.
You know, people became hip to that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
All right.
U2 don't have an album called U2?
No.
They don't. REM don't have an album called REM. You saved that for your album, Best of REM.
Yeah.
Best of U2.
So moving out of punker.
No self-respecting punk band has a Best of the Pistols. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So moving out of punk, there.
As a mod, I am defending punk, and it's right to be anarchic.
I never understood the mod thing. I mean, like, clearly this is a thing that.
Well, the clothes are nicer.
Well, but it goes back so far. Like, to be a mod is not to be rebellious at all, because it's been established and done for such a long amount of time.
It's
already
subversively rebellious. You look, you're like a version of, like, you like you're dressing in a suit and a tie.
On face value,
you look like you're part of the establishment, but really you're not.
It'd be like me dressing up like James Dean and leather. Like, you know, like it's out of date in that, it, you know, like, I think it's, I mean, it's.
Yeah, but look at James Dean had that floppy haircut.
Yeah.
He was a new romantic.
Okay. Closing out some of the things that are, you know, the most recent, I think it's the most recent thing that's on there, is Nirvana's Nevermind. Which, of course, has this one, which was the biggest song off of it, which... You call this, I guess, it's obviously grunge.
Well, it's grunge,
isn't it? Very much is a post-punk, post-rock, all type of thing,
yeah.
Kind of thing like that.
Son of punk.
Sounds like music.
Boy, it sounds like Teen Spirit, actually.
It smells like Teen
smells
Spirit.
Smells like Teen Spirit.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like Teen Spirit. It smells like Teen Spirit. So this one, like, when I first saw this on there, I was like, meh. But, you know, it is between this and Jeremy 10, Pearl Jam's album 10 with the song Jeremy
on it.
I mean, they launched grunge. I mean, like, totally changed the face of music. Probably in the process destroyed radio, because alternative radio started playing these things, then suddenly had to become this hit machine, which they continued doing all this stuff, and now all the alternative radio stations have died because they couldn't keep up with that, with the Linkin Parks and all the junk that came afterwards.
Is your question, why did Nirvana get in and not Pearl Jam?
No, I mean...
Is that your question?
I'm
going to answer that question.
There's an obvious answer.
What's the obvious answer?
Well, this is... It's better, and it's more...
That's actually not the answer.
More what it is. It's more of being grunge, whereas Pearl Jam at the time was the more sort of, it's almost more traditional in a sense. I mean, it's obviously sort of thing. I think now in retrospect, I think they both are, like, to counter your notion of the one guy in the raft kind of concept.
No, I wasn't going to go there with the lifeboat.
You can have more than one, and I think they probably both should be in, or at least maybe the track Jeremy should be in. But
you can make case for it. I think, and I have a serious and a semi-serious reason as to why Nirvana and Nevermind is the one in there. Because for most people who don't follow that form of music, when they hear that song, give them a few minutes and they'll be able to describe that it's Nirvana or that guy with a shaggy hair. Pearl Jam, unfortunately, they seem to be more part... They're identified as a genre rather than the face of the genre.
Yeah, no, that's right.
But people think of grunge, people think of Nirvana. They don't think of Pearl Jam. They think Pearl Jam is great music.
I think they think of it, but they don't. Like, that's not the first one they think
There's
of.
There's your serious analysis. I'm now going to give you your semi-serious analysis.
Let's see if
as
I know
to
it.
Why Nirvana
I'm
going to
write
in,
down what I think.
And Pearl Jam.
I'm
please
write
it down.
Hear what I think. Dun, is the semi-serious. You tell me what it is.
Yeah.
You tell me what it is.
Because he put shotgun in his mouth and he's dead. Everyone knows in rock and roll that the quickest way to infamy?
Infamy?
Well,
no, not infamy. It'd be fame, right?
Fame.
Infamy would be
fame. Infamy, to take it back a couple of episodes, is what happens at Pearl Harbor. Because it's the day that we'll live in infamy.
That's right.
The quickest way to immortality,
here we go,
is to kill yourself.
Yeah, right.
Or to die. Again, this is why Buddy Holly, Pain Crash, everyone thinks he's great. I can't name more than one helps. Buddy Holly song.
It helps because of the fact that
this is where Elvis got
preserved
it wrong.
In time.
This is where Elvis got it wrong. Elvis spent too much time with the peanut butter and the fried banana. If he just died spectacularly, he would be even bigger than he is now.
Well, but he did die. I mean, like, if he had lived and continued to play
Vegas, but
it was
sort of a slow demise.
Well, that's my point.
If he kept weight and sweating and, you know, the eating the bacon and
peanut butter. It's difficult to say that Elvis could have been bigger. I mean, he's obviously
all right. Let me change this. A dramatic death, rather than a death brought about by bad eating habits and high cholesterol, a dramatic death guarantees immortality.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with Jimi Hendrix. I mean, the reason is...
There you go, Jimi Hendrix.
No matter how they die, they are therefore preserved in time. There's no exactly. Overlayering of other stuff. And the thing is, like, Pearl Jam stuff now, today, is very good. And I've seen them in concert recently. Very good. Very enjoyable. But because there's all these other layers, it's watered down our historical thought of them.
The other thing about dying young is you don't have time to suck. Look at Paul McCartney. He's been rubbish since he left the band. Rubbish. Live and Let Die was his last big hit. All that stuff with Stevie Wonder, Elton John, all these are rubbish.
Still, people are paying the go.
Rubbish. The Christmas songs, rubbish. But when with the Beatles, brilliant.
We've also found time over the last year to comment on the news. Here, from our Richard III episode, we talk about Oscar Pistorius, the South African Olympian and Paralympian, ooh, that's a mouthful, nicknamed the Blade Runner, who stands accused of murdering his girlfriend.
So before we came on the show, you told me you knew how we could get to our next topic from this topic, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that works.
What's our next topic? Oh, Oscar Pistorius. Well, it would appear he's a bit of a villain, too.
All right, villain, too. Yeah, well.
Plus, in all seriousness, he has a disability.
That's right.
But so, Richard III had a bad back,
yeah.
And he was always crouched up. And
I see the connection there.
So there you go. But Oscar Pistorius, he looks like he was a villain.
Yeah. What do you think? I'm assuming that you are full in conviction mode.
Oh, I think
this guy did
it.
He's the worst ever. It's all premeditated and all that sort of stuff.
I've never been. I've had my car stolen.
I assume everybody knows who Oscar Pistorius is, by the way. Oscar Pistorius is the...
He's the guy that the Atlantic Voice website was very critical of when he tried to double dip at the...
Oh, yeah. That's one area where the two of us agree this whole running in the Olympics thing with the blade. So he's the guy he's had his legs amputated, ran the Olympics. We actually saw him run in the Olympics over there in London.
And, of course, Harrison Ford was Blade Runner, too.
It all comes together. That could have been your segue.
That could have been the segue, yes. I completely forgot.
Once we get to that point, I'm assuming people know he's been accused of killing his girlfriend in their house. He claims that he thought there was an intruder. It is apparently a fairly dangerous area, a lot of break-ins,
you know,
things like that. And in the middle of the night, he heard somebody in the bathroom, thought it was an intruder, and shot through the door four times and managed to hit her with three of them.
This is why I believe that he done it. I get that clearly in South Africa, apparently there's a lot of problems with sort of, I don't want to say low-level crime, but, you know, that sort of home invasion, people roaming the streets
It's fairly high-level crime,
But you know what I'm saying? I'm not talking about mafia crime. I'm talking about sort of random street crime, I think is maybe the phrase I'm looking for. As I said a few moments ago, I've had my car broken into. I don't know, historically, of any other incident where a burglar, upon being caught by the homeowner, has locked themselves in the bathroom.
Right.
Doesn't your brain tell you that normally, if I'm home alone and I think someone's breaking into my house, I'm going to be locking myself in the bathroom. I'm not going to chase him around the house and then he's going to lock himself in. What's he going to do when he locks himself in the bathroom? Is he going to try and call the police to come and save it?
No, maybe he's trying to go out the window. That's the way you always do it in the movies, right? You get locked in the bathroom and then you try and get out the bathroom window, but the bathroom window is too small and you can't get through the bathroom window, or it's on a second floor and you can't get through and then you're stuck in the bathroom.
There are reports of arguments going on beforehand, and I just find it very strange that the victim in this instance, her body... I don't think her body was found, but apparently they have evidence of the fact that she was shot through the bathroom door.
Yeah.
Now,
well, I don't think quite, because he says that's what he did.
That's what he did. But again, I really question this notion of someone, a burglar, someone with evil intent has broken into your house to steal your big screen or do whatever, and then they're suddenly going to get all scared and lock themselves in a bathroom. Admittedly, in a society where apparently there's a lot of crime and everyone's carrying guns. You're telling me that the burglar that broke into his house was in fact... the world's most cowardly, useless burglar who then decided to panic and lock himself in a bathroom.
You're focused on whether or not this actually would happen. The point is, if he thought that was going on, it may be completely illogical, but that doesn't tell you whether he might have actually thought it was happening. Maybe he was drunk. Maybe he was half asleep and he didn't know and he didn't realize it and he didn't have the time to sit around the table like we are now and saying how illogical it would be that somebody wouldn't be in the bathroom. And so he thought, geez, my girlfriend is right here in the bed next to me. Somebody is in the bathroom. It may be a home invasion or something's going on here.
But again, though, what does logic tell you that when you wake up, his girlfriend wasn't in the bed next to him?
Oh, well, that's what he said. So I'm not saying he's right. My point is, like,
I don't think his alibi has a leg to stand on.
Well, yeah. So anyway, I would say, you know, I think it's more likely than not that he's guilty of this sort of stuff. But I'm willing to listen for a little while. The part of this is the fact that I have no reason to believe the South African police, right? Like, I mean, we're taking this
apparently the lead detective
is up for seven charges of murder.
Like, so he might have done it. That would be my defense. Right.
So, like, that's part of it is that I was like, I don't think anybody's got any credibility here. And so, like, when you hear a story from this come, oh, you know, the police department over there says this is what happened. I mean, for example, one of the police detectives said he found testosterone there.
Okay.
And there's vials of testosterone. The same day the police department had to say, oh, no, hold on a second. We found vials of something. It hasn't even been tested yet. We're not sure what it is kind of thing. But everybody's busy running on at the mouth about what's going on here. So, you know, I am willing to wait and see how these things shake out a little bit. Like I said, more likely than not he did it. But I also won't be completely stunned if it turns out, you know.
Put it this way. Talking of O.J. Simpson, Oscar Pistorius' defense attorney should be making it all about the cop.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's what happened with O.J.
I'm sure that's what's going to happen.
Basically, I didn't do it. In fact, he might have done it.
Yeah.
This is the interesting thing, though, in all seriousness.
Well, of course, the difference here is he's saying he did it. He's just saying he did it on accident. That's why I say the whole thing about shooting through the door evidence. Well, I don't need evidence. He said he shot her through the door. It's just whether it was a mistake or not.
This is the interesting thing I find, though, about how this story is going to play out. Apparently in South Africa, and again, I looked at our internet stats. We don't have any listeners in South Africa. So, unfortunately, we don't have anyone who can write into us.
And now we never will.
We never will, no. Apparently in South Africa now, when he goes to trial, they don't have a jury there. They have a panel of judges. And the judges sit and listen, and then they decide. And so I was watching someone on telly who was saying that this is going to change. It changes how these cases play out. So, for example, if we think back to poor old OJ again, I say poor old OJ because did he do it or did he not? I can't remember what my position is on OJ now. I can't remember if I think he didn't do it or if he got railroaded or I can't remember anyway.
We'll do like a retro podcast.
We will go back in time and pretend to be in 1995. Yeah. I remember in that trial, there's the famous putting on the gloves and all this kind of nonsense. Clearly, things like that are very... they are visual and emotive stunts for a jury. What they say in South Africa is because they don't have jury trials, when this thing is actually argued, for want of a better word, in front of the judges, there won't be any of that nonsense. And it comes much more down to evidence and factual, and it's far less emotional.
It's not showy.
Than what we are led to believe trials are like on TV.
Right.
And even in the OJ case, that was actually a real trial on TV. It wasn't like that was a dramatization. I find that interesting about how this is going to play out.
Yeah, probably. I don't know how often like people plea or what they do or things like that. I mean, it could certainly be a situation where I could see some sort of, you know, he's... pleads out for some manslaughter, you know, criminally negligent homicide, whatever their corollary is over there, because he did shoot through the door. And if nothing else, he was an idiot, right?
Yes.
Like, listen, even if you take his story, then he ignored the logic that you have just
Exactly.
Put upon us that why would somebody be in your bathroom if they're invading
there
your
you
home kind of thing.
You see?
Maybe they're after his testosterone.
People think I'm crazy with these theories. But
they should
fact,
stop there.
In fact, in South Africa, I'm like one of the main men because I just talk the facts.
That's right.
I could go to South Africa right now and convince everyone that the moon landings were fake.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what the saying is. Like, if people think you're crazy, but the...
In the kingdom of the blind, the man that can see is the freak.
What?
But in the kingdom of the blind, the man who can see is the oddball, because everyone else is blind.
But I thought
the guy who can see is...
Doesn't that saying end with somebody's the king? In the something something, the somebody will be the king.
Well, that's a different saying. In fact, the saying I was thinking for this incident is, if it looks like a duck, if it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. The guy put a whole load of bullets through the door and killed his girlfriend.
Yeah.
He should be going down for that.
Yeah, he probably will.
Duck or no duck aside.
Now, we're not quite in spring yet.
We're not in spring.
You know, but as long as we're talking about sports.
But there's no longer a spring in his step. Da-dum.
I think you're going to have to clear some of these jokes in advance from here on out.
See, that's an interesting thing. I'm going to make a quick societal statement. The guy has just killed his girlfriend. Yeah, I'm a bad guy for making a joke.
Oh, I didn't say a bad guy. I just said it's a bad joke.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Bad jokes aside, maybe it's better off for everyone if we stick to the trivial stuff. Here we have a few laughs analyzing the Manti Te'o story, which appeared in our Faking It episode. If you remember, Te'o was the college football player who sparked a media hubbub for inventing an imaginary girlfriend. As Eric and I both say, who amongst us...
There's been a bit of an epidemic of faking
there's been
in the
an
world,
epidemic
hasn't
of
there,
faking,
you know?
There, yeah. Because the first one was this. The most interesting story, I think, is this Manti Te'o story.
Yeah, you know, I think it's... before we got on, I said, you know what? I need to make sure we know how to pronounce this properly. I was listening to Katie Couric a little bit of her interview, and she says
Manti. Hold on a minute. You were listening to Katie Couric?
Well, like, look, little...
you weren't watching
the
show,
no,
like, okay. All right, fair enough.
In keeping... You will see there's a number of times we're going to talk about things in the world, and neither of us have seen any of it. Actually, that's not true.
Well, no, it's Manti Te'o.
I think, but it's Manti, I think, actually, is how it's pronounced.
Well, how do you know it's not a fake name?
Well, it could be a fake name. But Katie Couric was saying Manti, so I'm going to go with Manti.
I'm going to call him Te'o.
And his dead fake girlfriend, Lenny Kakua, K-E-K-U-A. But...
Surely her having a man's name should have been a giveaway for him, surely.
right. Or is it Lanny? I don't know. Lenny. Oh, it's Lenay, L-E-N-N-A-Y or something like that. But I have a first important question.
Okay.
A very important question. Is it dead fake girlfriend or fake dead girlfriend?
Oh, it's a dead fake. She was his fake girlfriend and then she died.
Yeah, I guess it's...
So now he has a
dead fake girlfriend. It's not a fake dead girl. It's not that she's fake that she's dead, although it was fake that she's dead. She's really... fake as a whole. She's
when
a
she was his fake girlfriend, in his mind, she was alive, even though she was fake.
Right.
He didn't. So he wasn't discussing about, I used to have a girlfriend.
Not only in his mind, but in the mind of the entire Notre Dame administration and many people around the nation and sports writers and ESPN and everybody else.
Well, I'm going to say this now. Who amongst us have never had a fake girlfriend? I have a fake girlfriend right now. All the time I imagine, my girlfriend is really Charlize Theron. And, I'm going to leave now to go to the basement to do the podcast with Eric.
I'd
love to have steak and potato when I get home.
Other than right now, have you ever been interviewed and discussed your fake dead or your fake girlfriend?
No, but if that's
one thing to have a fake girlfriend
now,
in your mind.
Girlfriend.
It's one thing to have a fake girlfriend in your mind. It's another one to have a fake girlfriend that you have an in-depth conversation with the Sports Illustrated reporter about.
That's true. But I think if people asked me about my fake girlfriend, people wouldn't believe that I'd be going out with Charlize Theron. So that's why I don't. There's no point investing in that story.
Yeah, it fails the credibility test.
Yeah. But in my mind, I'm her boyfriend.
Yeah, this one worked as a credibility test. Seemed pretty logical. Get big football player at Notre Dame. You know, of course he's going to have lots of girlfriends. Was he going to have lots of girlfriends that he'd never ever met? That's sort of surprising.
I'm going to say this though about this scandal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a big storm in a teacup. Because in the end of the day...
Big storm in a teacup. Like a tempest in a teapot? Is that what you mean?
They're similar.
Okay.
Just over drinks. So the guy, he's what, 21 years of age. He lies to his buddies about having a good-looking girlfriend. All I'm saying is it happens all the time when you're that age. Oh, yeah, I went out with her, and I used to date, and she looked like a supermodel. They do it all the time. It's not his fault that everyone else ran with it.
It's like Anthony Michael Hall in Breakfast Club, his girlfriend in Niagara Falls.
There you go. It's exactly like that. Yes.
You know, so two things. I'll say one is that
everyone else bought into it, but that doesn't make him a liar. That makes everyone else a dope.
Well, okay.
Because he did what any 20-year-old does, lie about his girlfriend.
First of all, if that's true, if it was true that he was lying about this whole thing, lying about it for a year or more is maybe beyond. And like to talk about it and visits and things like that.
Because she lived somewhere else.
Lie to your dad about meeting the person and all that. It's lying to his family. Also, but I will tell you what.
My girlfriend, she lives in Czechoslovakia. That happens all the time.
I'm in the minority here.
Okay.
But I actually don't think he was lying. Most people seem to have come to the conclusion that he was in on this whole deal. And you were just talking about his friends being dopes. I think he's the dope. I think he, like, I don't know, like the clip I saw of Katie Couric was literally a variety of sentences with Katie Couric, who basically is saying not in these terms exactly, but are you stupid? I mean, how can you believe these things?
So let me clarify.
And I think the truth is he is stupid.
So let me clarify now. He had a fake girlfriend.
Yeah.
All right, so we both agreed he had it, because no one else can give you a fake girlfriend without you knowing about it. You have to have a fake girlfriend.
That's right, but it did not spring from his imagination.
So he really did go out with a girl.
He didn't go out, he had met her online.
But in his mind, okay, so he knew this, so this was a real person, and he turned it into, well, really, she's my girlfriend.
No, there's no real girl. There's somebody who's doing the impersonation. The story right now is it's a guy who knows him from home or something like that, who sort of set this whole thing up and set up a fake ID on... I feel like you're not maybe totally up to date on the story, but...
I'm not going to lie. Like most people, I'm like, yeah, what's the big deal?
Oh, well, this is going to be my end.
Unless you're the fake girlfriend, then you had, I think, because she died. So obviously I feel bad for the fake girlfriend.
The fake dead girlfriend.
She didn't exist, but she didn't exist, yeah. But she died a painful, non-existent death.
We hardly knew her.
No, this is what I'm saying. He creates this girlfriend,
He didn't create it. It definitely came from somebody else creating it. Whether he played along with that creation is a different story. There was a genuine Facebook
page. So he was conned then?
That's what he is saying, and I'm one of the minority that probably believe him.
See, I don't. I think he made up his girlfriend to impress his buddies. Then it got out of control, and then everyone else turned it into something.
Right.
And now he's backpedaling later because it turned into a story when really all he was doing was sitting around the dressing room with his friends, with his other football players. My girlfriend's really hot. She lives in Hawaii.
Realize he has phone bills with hours-long call on a daily basis to the number that he thought was hers in California. And so unless he was taking the time, not just to fake by telling these friends the story, but literally to have long fake phone calls to nobody for hours and hours on end.
So he and his buddy created a fake girlfriend.
Well.
That's what you're saying.
No, I'm saying the buddy created it.
Okay.
And it's a ruse. It's catfish. Have you seen the movie or the TV show Catfish?
No.
Okay. So that's,
I do want to say
that's
this.
About people with fake Facebook IDs or fake Twitter handles or things like that. And she had all those things. Pictures, all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's not something he conjured out of his imagination. There was a presence in the internet out
okay.
there. And he had all his interactions with her on the internet and the telephone. And that was the part he never... even when you listen to the interviews, he never said, like, outright, I met the person.
I want to say this, though, for Manti Teo. Or Manti. Or Manti.
Manti.
Whatever. I hope for his sake, considering how much mileage everyone else has made off of this, Katie Couric, ESPN, national newspapers, international newspapers, I've seen it on a British website, I hope someone somewhere trademarked the dead imaginary girlfriend. Because now everyone else is ripping her off for free.
Yeah, but then they'd have to tie it into some sort of merchandise or something like that. I guess they could try it on Facebook pages.
Maybe Notre Dame trademarked.
There was something you said in there that I wanted to get back to.
That made sense?
Which was that was... Well, no, there wasn't really much that made sense. But the one to come back to, which was that sort of a no harm, no foul. And that's, I think the reason that this story is so fantastic is because nobody cares what the right answer is. Like, it doesn't really... Nobody
doesn't mean anything.
No, exactly. Nobody lost any money. Exactly. Nobody actually died or sort of stuff. So it's more like this... It's like a case study. It's got to be a huge case study in, like, psychology class or something like that. I mean, whether he's in on or he's not in it, it's just a fascinating study of the way society reacts to these stories. I mean, the reason that otherwise... Well, semi-legitimate reporters, you know, people who are reporting for major news organizations were talking about this sort of stuff is because they willfully suspended their little bits and pieces of doubts because it's a story about a wonderful, wholesome Notre Dame football player, blah, 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 all sort of stuff. So whether he's in on it or not, there's all these levels of, like, interesting interactions where this could be a seminar class you could take in college for a whole semester just talking about the different facets of this sort of stuff. And the great part is, again... Other than him, he either looks like a stupid person or he pulled off a hoax. But either way, it's no harm to anybody in the real world. It's just like, you know.
Well, I will say this, though. I think some people have suffered. The fake girlfriend must have had a fake family, and they must be in fake mourning. So I feel bad for them.
One of our highest rated episodes was our discussion on war tech, car tech, and wearable tech. That it had so many listeners is a mystery to me, because while Eric has an enthusiastic grasp on all things technological, it's pretty clear that I know next to nothing. In this segment, we discuss the invention of a robot dog. Now, let me say in advance, I have never hurt an animal, and unlike Eric, I've never seen a dog read.
It's a company called Boston Dynamics that has, there's a series of videos out there.
We will link them on the blog.
Yeah, they have...
For those of you at home to watch, because these are, you need to watch these, even if you think we talk a lot of nonsense. Take a few minutes to watch these videos.
It's pretty interesting. So Boston Dynamics has a big contract with DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects something. I'm not sure that's exactly right.
Don't worry about it. I think people are impressed that we're even going near this sort of level of high-tech scientific knowledge. I think we're already blowing our audience away that we even have a faint grasp of this.
I think we are blowing our audience away. Wait till they see how we bring it down to our level. So they have their main project that you'll see most videos, and you may have seen them online already, is the Big Dog, which is a... I mean, when I talk about... It's a robot that is basically a four-legged... looks vaguely doggish in the sense that it's four-legged and its legs operate like a dog's legs, you know, with where the elbows are and ankles yeah. and all that sort of stuff. Doesn't really – well, there is a version that has a head. We'll mention in a second, but most of them don't have a head. And they you know, they're autonomous in that they walk around. You can program them and do this sort of stuff. And there's a bunch of videos available of them. And they're – you know, you'd think – you know, it's not the most complicated thing to make a little robot that crawls along a floor.
Sure.
But here, what they've done is they've integrated cameras and gyroscopes and all kinds of things so that it, like, can't be knocked over and things like that. And the idea of this thing is it could be used in a defense capacity, I suppose. You could deliver weapons and things like that, but mostly sort of
like a
mule.
It could also deliver mail, couldn't it?
Well, that's right.
The U.S. Postal Service could use it.
The stories about it mostly are about it being acting like a mule that, you know, with the amount of gear that a soldier has to carry now and things like that, this thing can carry something like 300 or 400 pounds, and you could load it up and yeah. you set it on its way. It set some record for like the longest automated travel of 12 miles. It doesn't go very fast, although they do have other.
What does it run on? Because I didn't.
You know, I saw a thing that said it has an engine. It said an engine, but I don't know if
that
really meant. I would have to think it's a battery. Although it did say something about, well, it said refueling, recharging, whatever it is. But it makes some noise. It's lots of servos. Like, it operates, obviously, based on electronic stuff. But I don't know if the electricity is battery-powered or if it's an engine. It wouldn't surprise me if it was like an internal combustion or some sort of fuel engine because...
But like a car,
the batteries would be very heavy.
Like a car where you have, like, you know, a premium or diesel, I would suggest with the robot dog it takes dry food only.
Yeah.
Otherwise it will make a robot mess.
Well, it might make a robot mess anyway. But what's weird is some of these videos that are out there are – it's obviously our evolution in terms of how we react to objects and things like that. You know, some things look cute and – this doesn't look cute. I mean, it's just like a hunk of metal on top of legs, but the legs and the way it moves is just animal-like enough one of the videos, and it's showing the balance of this thing.
It was amazing when you showed me. Yeah,
the thing is walking around a parking lot, and the idea to show the balance. A guy walks up and like picks up his foot and kicks it, like shoves it with the bottom of his foot, so that the thing is, you know, hurls like 4 feet to the left. But it doesn't tip over. Like in the legs, while they normally go forwards, backwards, the legs kind of sprawl out, like kind of like a rain a Bambi on the ice kind of thing, you know, where they're like slipping around, but holds itself upright. But immediately when you see this, you're like, that guy's a jerk. He just kicked the dog. And it's just a machine, but it's hard to not look at that and feel bad for the machine walking around.
When I saw the machine getting kicked and the way it sort of staggered but didn't fall over and then righted itself, it looked just like me kicking my dog when I was a kid. Dog a boot and the boot. And I was amazed. It was so realistic. It looked like a real dog.
Wait a minute. Have you just talked about kicking a dog when you were a kid? Because we're going to have to stop a moment.
But this is what I'm saying.
I assume you're being facetious, right?
The robot dog.
We didn't kick dogs as a child.
The robot dog looked just like a dog that you might have given like a boot to, like if he's coming and trying to eat your food, if you've put your food next to the couch and you give him a little tap, you know, just to sort of shoo him away. The robot dog looked just like that.
All right.
Although, again, this is my question now. Let's presume for a moment that I've given a dog a little tap when he's trying to nick my snacks on the floor. Why would I want to kick the robot dog? He's not going to steal my snacks.
Well,
so why would I want to kick him?
Well, of course, if it's a defense item, it's, you know.
What, so all the enemy are going to come and try and kick the dog?
Well, probably try to do worse. But it's really about, also had the video of it walking through
impressive.
The snow. It was walking through, like, various things that you would say, okay, if it was a basic machine. And what's interesting is this company's makes a number of different ones. So you talk about, like, reactions. One of the items crawls a vertical wall. Climbs up a vertical wall, and this one has six
legs.
Looked
like a spider.
Well, and that one has a different reaction, right? When you see that, you don't think, oh, there's some element of dog. You go, ooh, if that thing was coming up a wall, I would be frightened. You know, like it's
well,
scary.
Yeah, I mean, I would take my magazine and splat it.
Exactly.
I don't take any chances with any of these animals.
So, but, you know, it's...
Splat or a little tap.
As a person, you know...
Again, let me stress, little tap, dogs were not harmed in the process of my childhood.
I mean, just think of where we're headed, right? If our reaction to this thing that barely looks like a dog, other than the fact that it's got four legs, and it's pretty big.
I cannot stress this enough, and I would implore people to click on the link and look at it. I was amazed. I mean, it moved.
Yeah.
The way the legs moved. I mean, you know, you've seen older pictures of robots. Like older, and they move very robotic.
You know, like, yeah, moving our arms. You can't see on the podcast, but we're both moving our arms.
Moving
around,
arms
like
robots. Like robots, yeah. Very cliched, but when you click on this video and see this thing move with the four legs, it looks like an animal, a dog. I don't know. I guess a horse. Anything with four legs. It had this amazing sort of balance and movement.
Yes, there's a version.
And they've never replicated that with two-legged robots. That's why they give them wheels.
Right, but you can imagine how. If that's our reaction to that one, that when they make one that's more like a person and look, I mean, like, you put a skin on this thing, suddenly we're all going to be like, oh, nice dog, you know, kind of thing. And then it's going to, like, get you. Because obviously it could be used from a weapon standpoint. One of the other videos, I didn't get to show you, but was a version of it that the dog had a head, so to speak. It's basically a neck that went out with a big claw on the front. And it was picking up cinder blocks, full-size cinder blocks, whipping them over its shoulder and throwing them 30 feet. Against the wall. And again, it was a balancing, I think, because what was interesting is when you see it flip around, it would stretch its legs out just like an animal would that was trying to fling something around and keep itself standing. I mean, it wasn't really about, wow, they throw cinder blocks around. You can make a lot of things that could throw cinder blocks around, but it picked it up, threw it back over its shoulder kind of thing. So, you know, the cute dog is going to come in there and just throw a cinder block at you. Your reaction might be different.
It was pretty amazing, and it looks so lifelike. You're right. You can imagine how emotionally you're going to feel. Again, when you see it kicked, you feel bad for it.
Yeah.
In the same way that in Terminator, when Arnold is a good Terminator and he gets shot, you're like, Arnold, get up. But it doesn't matter because he's only a robot.
Yeah, so
you are then like, you're like, ooh, Arnold. You could actually get Arnold because he's strong enough with muscles. He could throw some cinder blocks around as well.
I think the Boston Dynamics dog was maybe more human seeming than Arnold. it does bring to
a little less leathery.
You know, if they are going to make these things not in a defense capacity, but they're going to make these robot dogs, what kind of jobs are the regular dogs going to get? Like, I mean, we're going to put all the regular dogs out of business because you'd have to feed them too much.
Well, what jobs do the regular dogs do? Okay,
they keep you company. Apparently, they get kicked by you. But
okay, you have the dogs that help blind people, so they're working dogs. You have the dogs that sniff out bombs, so they're working dogs.
Uh-huh.
But most other dogs, they're just hanging around the house, annoying you, looking for treats. Like on TV, it's like, oh, the dog went to get the paper. I've never owned a dog that went out to get the paper in.
I need to put my hand over the microphone as I explain to Zeph that he's not really improving the human nature of this thing when he starts saying that dogs don't have any value. We all know dogs have tremendous value.
In South
we
Korea, like them they a eat lot. Them.
Yes,
so well, that is a value.
You can't eat a robot dog, right? So that'll work out. But no, the dogs are very important companions to people. We've been evolved together. Yeah, there's a whole thing going on there.
And those dogs that do the racing up in Alaska, that's like, yeah, I mean, they're like the top. That's like being in the NFL if you're a dog, if you're in that race across Alaska.
Yeah, I don't think they get the time off in the VIP lounge that the
yeah, but in the dog world, players do. In the dog world, they've got a certain cachet. Like, oh, yeah, you know, my cousin Ken, he's a pro athlete in Alaska.
Yeah, well, they're the toughest dogs.
Oh, like really? My buddy Dave works for the DEA. You know what I mean? When dogs talk to each other, there's a lot of that.
You know, well, they're the tough dogs, you know, and not everybody's going to be attracted to the tough dogs, meaning in the dog world, right? So, you know, some people, some dogs, other might be right, like a more intelligent and bookish dog.
Which the robot, but the robot dog is going to be able to do everything.
Yeah, a friend of mine had a dog that could read.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Allowed?
No, not allowed.
His lips
it's a dog. What are you talking about?
How does he know that the dog can read? We're staying on technology, but I do need to get an answer to this. How did your friend know that the dog could read? If he doesn't move his lips,
I don't know if my friend did. I knew that Rudy could read. Rudy would
say. Oh, so you now think that. Oh, dearie me. Okay. I'm going to leave it there.
That's really? I mean, not.
Eric knows the dog.
It's mostly young adult fiction. I mean, so it wasn't like a high level of book, but Rudy was a reader.
Are you sure he wasn't just looking at the pictures?
As we get towards the end of our first ever Best Of podcast, I assume saying first ever does lead one to the slightly disturbing conclusion that in the future there might be more. It's worth keeping in mind that what makes podcasts so unique is the fact that they are distinctly personal. Here, Eric gives us some insight into his home life. I'll leave you to decide exactly what that view looks like.
You know, in keeping with the technology here in the room, the other difference right now is I happen to be missing my laptop computer, and that's because
One of the interns is away.
That's right, one of the interns. The other member of the basement studio household, who would normally not live in the basement studios themselves, but in the floors above, is away at the beach and had to bring the laptop with her. And so she's got that, and so I'm working off my tablet, which is more than adequate to the task for things generally. But it was
long-time listeners will know that tablet is not an Apple.
No, of course not. It's an Android tablet.
Is that a Samsung?
No, well, it's made by Samsung, but it's Google's Galaxy Nexus. Nexus.
I would imagine that news last week would have made you happy that Apple apparently have to pay out to Samsung, not vice versa.
I don't really care too. I mean, like, you know, it's not I'm a Samsung person. It's about the software. It's about the systems. It's about a philosophy more than it is about a manufacturer.
All right.
But it was sort of interesting. Actually, Apple is in a big – I mean, this is a side note, but they're in a big fight. Not a fight, but they're about to roll out supposedly like a cheaper iPhone to the rest of the world because the rest of the world is using Samsung and Android products because they don't want to spend what we all spend in America on iPhones know, that they want for it.
But I don't know. I have a BlackBerry.
Yeah, you go.
Again, with the buttons. What's
staying true to character. But because of the fact that I don't have a laptop, like I said, while I've got the tablet here for in the room, it did make it slightly more difficult to perform research. So in other words, the research department and that group is off.
Okay.
And since we weren't able to rely on me for research, this was an ideal occasion to do a technology-focused podcast, didn't you think?
It would appear that this episode will be light on facts, but perhaps more heavy on opinion.
Look, we have a guest here at the podcast.
Oh, this is a four-legged intern who's just wandered into the basement studio. Yeah. The four-legged interns don't do anything other than poke about and nearly knock over your drink that's on the floor.
No, I won't do that then. So the first topic, well, let's see. Let me see if I've got this right. Oh, you know, I should mention, by the way, the fact that I'm missing my computer and significant other from the household.
I'm glad you put it in that order.
Yeah, right.
But I'm missing my computer. Oh, and my significant other. I'm really missing my computer.
That's right. So I'm in bachelor mode this week.
Okay.
Which for me has entailed eating like the same food out of the freezer repeatedly. Like I had a dozen bagels frozen, and I've been eating nothing but bagels all week and watching Netflix
Battlestar Galactica.
So basically you're undernourished and constipated. Is that what you're telling me?
None of the last part. I don't know about that. But I'm staying up too late watching these stupid shows. Actually, it's not that stupid. It's a nice enough show. But that's just to go to show that at this stage in my life, my bachelor week off, not a terribly exciting event. I'm not off like...
You know, you didn't prep for knowing that you'd be on your own. You didn't prep by ordering in multiple nights of Chinese food or just cooking great big steaks and nothing else.
No.
And eating ice cream before eating your egg and sausage.
No, when I'm by myself, I go to like a pure sustenance mode. Okay, you know, it's just hanging out, watching TV and sustain enough food to sustain myself, and that's pretty much it.
You're sort of vaguely puritanical about being back on your own. It's almost like a Buddhist experience. Holistic experience for you.
Yeah, the TV is probably cuts against that, because there's a lot of TV associated with the time here. And, of course, in fact, this is actually Saturday night. It's another one of our Saturday night podcasts, so you know I'm having a heck of a time there that I'm sitting on here.
But it also means that they are top quality.
Is that right? The top shelf ones are the Saturday nights versus
Well, we
the
did the beer one on a Saturday
yeah,
night.
That's a pretty good. In fact,
it was a very entertaining
show. We have a lull partway through this, it's because I ran off to the refrigerator by myself, get myself a beer. So
bring me a bagel while you're at it.
There you go.
We finish by continuing along those lines of podcasts being personal expressions. Ours also seem to be an excuse for bad jokes, ropey impersonations, poor accents, vague attempts at singing, and in general, bad ideas masquerading as good ones. I'll leave you to decide what's what in this audio montage that weaves through riffs on Starbucks, Richard III, The Lone Ranger, Hugh Jackman, bad Italian accents, a questionable Jar Jar Binks impersonation, an indescribably poor Michael Caine, and a Jimmy Stewart that hits both ends of the spectrum within seconds. Somewhere in hell, Saddam Hussein is sitting at his Starbucks, his local Starbucks in hell. He's sitting there having his daily cup of coffee with Hitler, Pinochet, Attila the Hun. He's looking at them going, see, none of this has anything to do with me. You don't get that?
No, I don't.
Well, because last time we were attacked by terrorists, we took out Saddam Hussein. And he ended up having to do with it. So he's sitting there right now in hell with his daily cup of coffee at Starbucks going, look, this has nothing to do with me, in a very defensive way.
I think the fact that you're assuming that...
There's my Saddam Hussein
bit. That hell has Starbucks is the most interesting aspect of that story.
Well, I do want to now have a shot at Starbucks. I went to a Starbucks this week. It was 2 p.m. I say, can I get a cup of decaf? The woman looks at me and says, we don't brew decaf after 1 o'clock. Not we were out today, but we don't brew decaf after 1 o'clock. We will do you a decaf Americano. And I'm like, isn't that the whole point of decaf?
That's
that
really
I can
weird.
Get a cup of coffee after 1 o'clock. And I don't want to name the Starbucks on air and finger them. But to me, that actually is proof that there's Starbucks in hell, because that's the kind of place where they wouldn't sell you decaf at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
That is pretty weird. I don't know why you would. Why
Her words would were, like... we don't brew decaf after 1 o'clock.
Huh.
And then she said, I will do you a decaf Americano. It wasn't like, oh, we're out, can you wait? It was, we don't brew decaf after 2 o'clock. And I'm standing there in Starbucks where they boast about the fact you can have your coffee 129,000 ways. You just can't get a decaf after 1 p.m.
Well, at least at that one. I wonder if that can't be a regular policy. We should have to look that up. You should have done some research on that topic and seen if this is an actual policy.
Well, I don't know. I got decaf Americano, so my angst immediately went down, and what did I get?
Isn't an Americano like when they make an espresso and they just mix water in with it?
Yeah, so they made me a decaf espresso.
Right, so they could make that by a single cup. That's the thing. The difference is what you're saying is there's no pot of decaf.
Well, that's what
pull you a regular
but,
glass
but
of it.
Wouldn't you use more decaf in the afternoon?
No, I agree with that. I just want to clarify for people who would never have any reason to order Americano, which I wouldn't either.
It's one of the reasons that in hell, Saddam Hussein, Hitler, and Attila the Hun all drink their coffee in the morning. Because they can't get a decaf after 1 o'clock at the Starbucks.
Yeah, with any luck, they have to only drink decaf all the time, which would be the true hell of a Starbucks, having to drink it where it's only decaf.
All right, fair enough. To quote Shakespeare.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is they say, you know, he's had horrible...
My kingdom for a horse.
Is that Shakespeare?
That's Richard III, Shakespeare.
Oh, that's right, because he lost his horse during the battle. Is that the whole deal?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just know that's from Richard III by Shakespeare.
No, I think that's the deal. So he was
now
in this battle.
Now is the winter of our discontent.
Oh, well, I don't know. If,
there you go. Look at this. I did some internet research. I find
that's the Atlantic Voice Shakespeare Repertoire Company. That's one of our subdivisions. Now, I just brought that little snippet to you.
You're not really representing the English side of the Atlantic Voice too well.
Did you notice they didn't have the Lone Ranger's voice on there? They had Johnny Depp briefly on there, his voice.
Is that Lone Ranger or is that Bonanza?
That's Bonanza. The Lone Ranger's.
Okay.
So isn't it the William Tell overture?
Yes, you're right. That's Lone Ranger. I had my dilindalins confused.
Exactly.
I was confusing Bonanza with Lone Ranger.
Maybe I'm not that big a huge Jackman.
I've never been a big Hugh Jackman fan, and I'm not knocking him for
being. Not that he's bad. It's just that he doesn't have like.
Although he was great when he did the Oscars, he's a song and dance man.
Well, he doesn't have like.
Hugh Jackman should
do? Depth of character that interests me.
But you know what Hugh Jackman should do, and I know he's done it on stage. They need to find a way to remake Dick Van Dyke movies like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and Mary Poppins. And if you put Hugh Jackman in
awesome,
that, he would be brilliant,
right?
Because that's his natural talent. He's a song and dance guy.
See, I think you put him in a role like this where he's supposed to be brooding and have a deep story.
He's
too polished and shiny and song and dancey kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm just not as interested in that sort of thing.
And I feel like he's a bit like Pierce Brosnan as Bond. It's almost like he's trying too hard a little bit. No, I never saw Les Misérables because that was a lot of singing but not any dancing. But I'd love to see Hugh Jackman in something like a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I think he'd be brilliant.
That's pretty funny.
Would you go see
a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang movie?
I'd like the original. If they remade it with Hugh Jackman, I'd go and see it. I'm a sucker for a vintage flying car. I am.
Well, all right, then. Maybe they could put him in a remake of Sound of Music.
I don't know if I'd go and see that. Mm. Well, no, but he doesn't do much. But the male character doesn't do too much singing in that. He would have to be in drag. As the Julie Andrews character.
Edelweiss,
in which case I would probably go and see it. But that's one song.
Edelweiss.
You should be in the Sound of Music remake.
Yeah, I could do that.
When's that going to be rebooted?
That would be a tough one, man. Well,
You could have. She would be a nurse working in a compound in Pakistan trying to get the kids away from Al Qaeda.
Since it's based
on
a true story.
Like 0.30 type-ish.
Yeah.
That's how you redo it.
It's hard to find that many excuses to have the family sing.
There are only three movie ideas in Hollywood. I've just redone one. Anyone out there, I own the reboot rights to Sound of Music and setting it in the Middle East with Al Qaeda.
I don't think you just put a flag in it and claim it.
I am now. I own that movie.
Last trailer.
Julie Andrews, believe you. I'll do you no wrong. You'll
last
be proud
trailer.
Of the reboot.
I was trying to decide if an Italian accent would be appropriate for this story, but I decided it didn't really cut.
Well, it's a drone.
That's a real one, but if you're going to be comical, but it's like, that's a spicy drone up there. He's just right over here on my right wing. What's he doing over there? Get out of here.
See, now you're dealing in racial stereotypes. Even amongst robot technology, you're dealing in robot racial stereotypes.
I don't know if that's a racial stereotype. Yeah. It's a bad accent imitation, I think. Pretty much confirmed that Leia, meaning Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker have signed on for the next episode that's coming out.
What about Indiana Jones? Has he signed up?
You know, there was something from George Lucas that, and this is where they got the confirmations, because the other two had said things like that, but then George Lucas apparently was interviewed somewhere where he indicated that part of the negotiation of the value of this property being sold to Disney was, do you have these people signed on? Because that would presumably have more value. Whether that's better as a movie or not, I don't know. But it certainly has more value to Disney if they know that the old stars are signed on.
Hopefully they are signed on. I think, as we know my position, those first three movies are good. Those last three movies sucked. Copyright Atlantic Voice.
This weekend on Saturday Live, they had a joke when they showed them up there on that little news update they do on Saturday Live. And they said... they then cut to a picture of Jar Jar Binks, and they said, "Misa late, waiting on the phone." you're bringing back the old stars. You must be bringing back Jar Jar Binks.
That was your Jar Jar Binks accent.
That's right.
Was it modeled on anything in particular?
Jar Jar Binks.
Okay. Old Michael Caine film called Get Carter. It was remade with Sylvester Stallone.
I was going to say that's the one I remember.
Well, this is an Atlantic Voice movie tip. If you ever get the chance, watch the original Get Carter. It was made in, 71, 72. Michael Caine plays this gangster who's gone up to Newcastle. He's a London gangster, so he's gone to this northern industrial town to find out who killed his brother. Gets off one of the early scenes, he gets off the train and he goes into the pub near the station. And he says to the barman, "I'll have a pint of bitter." And the barman starts to pour it. And Michael Caine clicks his fingers and then says, "In a straight glass." Now, you've just been
given I was about to tell you, you should start doing it at restaurants. I think that would be a nice little quirk for you, Zeph.
He goes, "In a straight glass." And the whole point was he wanted his beer in a proper glass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there you've just been given your free Michael Caine impression.
That's what it was. It didn't really sound that much different than you.
Oh, it is different.
A little bit, but it didn't sound that much that I noticed. Oh, that was a big imitation.
In a straight glass.
All right, I hear that. I don't watch a lot of... I don't think I've seen even a lot of Jimmy Stewart movies, but I've seen that one over and over again. Maybe it was just on TV all the time.
And he was young when he did it. See, I always think of Jimmy Stewart... the older Jimmy Stewart,
right,
in films like all his Alfred Hitchcock movies, where he seems like an older gentleman.
Yeah.
Flight of the Phoenix, where he seems older. But whenever I see stills, I've seen stills of It's a Wonderful Life, and I've seen Movie Channel's preview that It's a Wonderful Life will be on for Christmas. He looks very young, and then I know that I'll be watching something else. I think it's actually got to the stage where I want to avoid It's a Wonderful Life. Because if you and I are still doing this podcast when we're 75, I can look at you and say, in Christmas 2040, I still haven't seen It's a Wonderful Life.
I'll gradually give you little slivers just so you eventually have heard it all. Actually, interesting enough, Jimmy Stewart, I think part of it is his voice, right? He's he already had that voice where he's talking about Clarence. He always seemed old right out of the gate. Yeah, that's my impersonation of the week.
That's very good, Jimmy Stewart.
Zuzu's pedals. Here we go.
That wasn't so good. So that's your lot for our first ever Best Of episode. As I said before, we're coming up on 1 year in existence. Eric and I hope you'll stay with us for next year and the years beyond. As we always say, take care. You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. For more, you can follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. Or you can find this show and others on Libsyn.com or on iTunes. The Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.